Good morning. After hours of deliberation, House Republicans have updated the details of their spending bill. Speaker Mike Johnson says it could get a vote today. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. The Trump administration has officially accepted a luxury jetliner from Qatar. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. What will it take to make it secure enough for a U.S. president to use as Air Force One? It's been almost 5 years since a Minneapolis police officer killed George Floyd, setting off days of protest and destruction near the 3rd Police Precinct. What that neighborhood looks like today through the eyes of its former police chief. It is Thursday, May 22nd. Happy birthday to supermodel Naomi Campbell. She's 55 years old today. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. A few minutes ago, the House of Representatives voted to pass the multi-trillion-dollar budget bill that's backed by President Trump. It passed by a single vote, 215 to 214. House Speaker Mike Johnson says one lawmaker voted present. Two staff members of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. have been shot and killed. They were leaving an event at a Jewish museum last night. D.C. Police Chief Pamela Smith says a suspect is a 30-year-old man from Chicago. He has been arrested.
Once in handcuffs, the suspect identified where he discarded the weapon, and that weapon has been recovered, and he implied that he committed the offense. The suspect chanted, "Free, free Palestine," while in custody.
The Israeli embassy has identified the slain staffers as Yaron Lashinsky and Sarah Milgram. President Trump continued to tell South Africa's visiting president yesterday that his country is ignoring white genocide. He handed South African President Cyril Ramaphosa articles and showed him a video in the Oval Office in front of reporters. Ramaphosa again told Trump that's not true. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg. South African media have praised Ramaphosa for his handling of the meeting.
Composed but firm was the verdict from South African media after Ramaphosa managed to avoid a shouting match with Trump, despite what one local news outlet called, quote, serious provocation. Many South African news websites, Live Blog then counter, fact-checking some of the US leader's misinformation in real time. They debunked the conspiracy theory that there's a genocide of white farmers and noted no land had been seized by the government. The Daily Maverick newspaper summed up the meeting, writing, quote, "All in all, it was awful, but it could have been worse." For NPR News, I'm Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg.
The Walt Disney Company has placed some of its Florida-based employees on unpaid leave. They're living in the U.S. under Temporary Protected Status, or TPS. This comes after the Supreme Court cleared the way to end TPS for 350,000 Venezuelans. NPR's Chloe Veltman reports.
Around 45 employees received emails from Disney saying they must provide valid new work authorizations or they will lose their jobs next month. A Disney spokesperson says the company has placed affected employees on leave with benefits for 30 days effective May 20th to ensure the company is not in violation of the law. Niorca Melendez is the co-founder of the nonprofit Venezuelans and Immigrants Aid.
It is terrible. We as Venezuelans feel really frustrated.
Temporary protected status provides non-permanent legal status to individuals threatened by armed conflict and other catastrophes in their home countries. A California federal judge is scheduled to hear a case next week challenging the Trump administration's plans to end this protection for Venezuelans. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
This is NPR. The ACLU says detained activist Mahmoud Khalil will be allowed to have a visit with his wife, but apparently not his newborn baby, whom he's never met. Khalil, a former Columbia University graduate student and permanent legal U.S. resident, is being detained in Louisiana. The Trump administration wants to deport him. His lawyers say that's for his peaceful activism, calling for an end to the war in Gaza. A large number of Americans are consulting non-traditional spiritual practices. That's according to a new survey. Catherine Post of Religion News Service has more.
According to a new survey from Pew Research Center, 3 in 10 American adults consult a fortune teller, tarot cards, or astrology at least once a year. Those practices are especially popular among younger adults and women. And, the survey finds, Nearly half of LGBTQ Americans consult astrology at least once a year. Chip Rotolo of Pew says this isn't surprising.
These practices sometimes emphasize things like fluidity and openness.
Still, just 6% of U.S. adults say they rely on these practices when making major life choices, according to Pew. For many, it's just for fun. For NPR News, I'm Catherine Post.
This story is from a collaboration between NPR and Religion News Service. The upcoming Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start of summer, but forecasters say a powerful nor'easter is headed for the northeastern part of the U.S. The rare May storm will pour heavy rain from mid-Atlantic states up to New England. Officials warn flash flooding may be a threat. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics, presenting Jane Austen Wrecked My Life, a romantic comedy about a woman who dreams of becoming a writer and experiencing true love while attending a Jane Austen writer's residency. Opens in select cities Friday.
I'm Heidi Holton. In northern Minnesota, food isn't just about what's on the plate. It's how we show up for each other. And that's why we're launching a new show, Ham Radio Cooking with Amy Thielen. James Beard Award-winning cookbook author from Park Rapids, Amy's going to bring stories, recipes, and real conversations about cooking here at home.
I've written stuff about cooking and about Midwestern food for a national audience. But there's this kind of a distance sometimes. I want to talk to the people I love. I assume they know how to cook. I assume they're out there doing all these things, digging potatoes, making maple syrup and stuff like that. I know that people are doing that, and I want to celebrate what we do here. And I also want to celebrate our curiosity.
Ham Radio Cooking with Amy Thielen on KAXE beginning Friday, May 23rd at 6 p.m. Also available as a podcast. Made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of Minnesota.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, coming to you from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. House Republicans have approved a massive bill at the heart of President Trump's domestic agenda. Here's House Speaker Mike Johnson ahead of the vote this morning.
This is a historic moment that we will be talking to our children and our grandchildren about, and everyone will remember. America's back.
The bill would, among other things, extend President Trump's 2017 tax cuts before they expire at the end of the year and revamp immigration policy.
And if NPR's congressional correspondent, Claudia Grisales, has been following this. Claudia, how do we get to this place? Because there have been long negotiations and debates that went through the night.
Exactly, all through the night, and they just passed this massive tax and spending plan. It's quite the turnaround from just a few hours ago. They overcame a series of hurdles overnight, from GOP holdouts to fierce objections from Democrats, pushing this plan out of a House Rules Committee hearing that lasted more than 20 hours and a key procedural floor vote before the final passage. President Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson may have pulled off what we've seen several times this year, another 1-2 punch of GOP holdouts, and to get them back in line. These fiscal conservatives or members of the House Freedom Caucus flipped to yes after an hours-long White House meeting with President Trump and Johnson yesterday, and in the end, it passed by just one vote.
Wow, by a whisker. All right, so
yes.
After this meeting, yeah, Republican leaders released an updated version of this plan. What's different about it now?
Right. They made tweaks to this plan to address concerns from holdouts that it could raise the deficit. But we should note this big bill kept a lot of its big provisions in place, such as extending the Trump tax plan, as we mentioned, major policy changes on immigration and energy, and campaign promises that Trump made, like no tax on tips. It also includes a major win for GOP supporters to raise the cap on state and local tax deductions. But those final tweaks to the bill to win over these holdouts included moving up new work requirements for Medicaid to next year and phasing out some energy tax credits. These changes, along with plans Johnson said would involve future presidential executive orders, got momentum back in leadership's favor.
Now, Democrats did try to delay the plan.
Right. Unlike House Freedom Caucus members, however, Democrats don't have much influence here. However, they slowed down the process as much as possible. That included leading a series of fiery arguments on the floor, raising concerns about plans to install these new Medicaid cuts that look to jeopardize coverage for millions of Americans.
All right. So Speaker Johnson wants to get this bill on track to the Senate by Memorial Day. What has to happen now?
So, right. This is a major step, but it is still a very long way to go to getting this to President Trump's desk, as Senate Republicans already have raised plenty of concerns about this bill. Senate Majority Leader John Thune is going to face a tough task threading the needle between this House plan and concerns from his own members. That includes fiscal hawks in that chamber, as well as moderates who have concerns about those Medicaid cuts. So they've already made clear they plan to make a lot of changes to this House bill.
That's NPR's Claudia Grisales. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Economists have been warning that President Trump's trade policy could lead to a recession. The administration's decision to pause most tariffs for 90 days and solid job market numbers tamped down those fears for a time. But now those fears have returned. Moody's downgraded the U.S. credit rating last week, and Congress is in the midst of budget negotiations that could add trillions to the national debt over the next decade. This has led to a sell-off of U.S. bonds, long considered a safe investment. So what does all this mean about the state of the economy? We're going to ask economist Jason Furman. He is a professor at Harvard, and he served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. Good morning, Professor Furman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with your sense of the health of the U.S. economy right now. What indicators are you looking at?
You know, so far, the real data, when you look at how many jobs there are, how much people are spending, that's quite good. When you look at people's plans and the plans that businesses have for the future, that's really quite bad.
So let me just ask you, sort of, we've been talking about the budget negotiations in Congress, and of course we've been covering the president's, you know, trade policy, you know, all along. So how much of the current uncertainty in the economy is a result of the president's trade policy, specifically tariffs? And then of course I want to ask you about those budget negotiations as well. So take the trade policy first.
Yeah. So we have had uncertainty, and economists have different ways of measuring it, at basically record levels, higher than during the financial crisis, higher than during COVID. That's come down some, but it remains very high. That's been almost entirely about trade. And last week, President Trump said that within a few weeks, he's going to reannounce the higher so-called reciprocal tariffs. People were very hopeful we'd reach a lot of trade deals. We did reach a deal with the UK, but deals with every other country have so far proved elusive.
And what about the budget negotiations in Congress? How are economists viewing those?
You know, to me, the worry there is more medium and long term, and that's really quite serious, so I don't want to belittle it. But things like this tend not to push you into recession in the way that the wild swings in tariff rates really risked a recession, especially if we had kept the higher tariff rates on. What things like this adding trillions of dollars to the debt do is they raise interest rates, they raise mortgage rates, they slow economic growth, but all of that plays out generally, historically, over a longer time scale.
So based on what we've just been talking about, how concerned are you about the risks of a possible recession? And if you can, if you feel comfortable with this, what would your timeline be for that analysis?
So, you know, recession is a binary thing. You either have one or you don't. I like to think of the economy more on a continuum. So, you know, if your temperature is 99.4 degrees, you probably have to go to school or work, but you're probably feeling pretty lousy. And that looks like we're on the equivalent something more like that, maybe something like a 1% growth rate this year. That's not a full-blown recession. That's not a historic crisis that we'll remember. But that's basically every family having, you know, something like $2,000 less because of the combination of all of these. Moreover, coming out of it, we never fully get that back unless the trade policy returns to normal and we start to get our debt under control. So that just compounds over time. All that said, huge amount of uncertainty around what I just said.
So, you know, before we let you go, look, obviously how you look at all this depends on your situation, right? If you're close to retirement, if you're trying to get a job or maybe try to get a better job, or if you're trying to buy a house. So it's very hard for you to give kind of one size fits all advice. But for people who, do you have some general words of wisdom for people who are worried about the economy right now, both in the near term and in maybe, say, the medium term?
Right. I mean, some things will affect everyone. You know, if you buy coffee, bananas, tea, just about anything, that's going to go up in price. When it comes to your retirement, you know, we've seen the stock market go up and down depending on what the president does. And when it comes to jobs, you know, for most people, their jobs should be okay. But asking more certainty from the government would give everyone more certainty.
That is Jason Furman. He's an economist and professor at Harvard. He also served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama administration. Professor Furman, thank you so much for your time and these insights.
Thanks for having me.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Have we got some news for you? The state of New York is doing away with allowing kids as young as 11 to deliver newspapers.
Like Newsies?
Kind of like that. Those kids on their bikes tossing freshly printed newspapers on the doorsteps in the early morning. Now, Newsies started delivering papers as early as 1833. That's according to the nonprofit Poynter Institute. Today, there are fewer papers to deliver as local publications scale back due to falling advertising revenue and also the prevalence of online news. The Local News Initiative reported last year that overall circulation has decreased by more than 60% since 2005.
Okay, so let's look back at this classic youth job.
I just had inky fingers basically for 2 years straight.
That's Mary Snyder. She is now a senior writer with On Milwaukee.
In the 1980s, 12-year-old Snyder and her friend were the only paper girls on the block delivering the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel both after school and on Sundays.
It was a 7-day-a-week job because 6 days a week, you had the afternoon paper, but then we also had the Sunday morning paper was the Journal. So on Sunday mornings was when we had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, sub the papers and, you know, go deliver them.
Snyder says she made $20 a week.
Don Espanol's experience was a little more relaxed in Williams, West Virginia.
I was able to deliver any time of the day that I wanted. As long as someone got the paper that day, it was fine.
Now a developer for IT business apps, delivering papers was the first time he felt like a working person.
Right. I mean, yeah, having a paper route, a huge responsibility. You handle receipt books, hold bags of cash, sell subscriptions, and accomplish a set task every day.
Alicia Modestino is an expert in youth employment at Northeastern University.
It turns out when you talk to young people or survey them, one of the things that they develop over the summer, in addition to soft skills, is really good work habits.
But with a decline of iconic jobs, such as having a paper route, how are kids getting work experience after school and in the summer? Modestino says retail and restaurant jobs are popular among teens today, and many are even looking at jobs that can help them developmentally.
It's very common for young people to be doing overnight camps or internships or volunteering, other kinds of things that look good on a college resume.
So one chapter closes, another one opens, but don't forget babysitting. That's still around. This is NPR News.
And you're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Kari Hedlund. Good morning. It's a beautiful morning outside. The skies are mostly clear. A little bit of cloud cover throughout the region. And that will be clearing off today to give way to sunny skies with highs around 68 degrees. We have Kick It with KAXE going on tonight. We have our annual meeting starting at 5:45, And that will be a great recap of 2024. We'll take some board nominations. And then we have a beautiful night of music with Molly Mayer. And we'll give out volunteer awards. And then Tegalexi and Woodblind, the reggae collective, coming to Grand Rapids at the patio of Rapids Brewing. This is free and open to everyone. Please come and hang out with us tonight. The Minnesota Department of Transportation has an open house about Highway 200 construction today from 4 to 6 at Itasca State Parks Visitor Center. The project will begin in July and affect Highway 200 between Clearwater Road 2 and Highway 71. Also going on today, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Committee hosts a veteran resource fair from noon to 4 at Minnesota North Hibbing Campus. There will be a benefit seminar at 12:30, plus resource providers and a free lunch for veterans. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com. Up next, our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin.
Gone fishing. Babble, 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 babble. There's a sign up on your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. They each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You bother me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing,
bapa baby, bapa baby, mose.
Oh yeah.
We are gone fishing today with Jeff Sundin, our early bird fishing guide. You can hear him every Thursday morning around 6:20. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
How are we doing this morning?
Chilly.
It is chilly, but it's a beautiful morning.
The interesting thing about it, somehow or another, the cold weather doesn't seem to have killed the fishing.
Okay.
We're kind of lucky. We're lucky that it's early in the season.
Sure. Because would the heat that we saw early on, would that have had a bad effect on the season?
Well, that's a good question. It would have been, I think it would have been good overall. I'm not sure if it kept on going for a really long extended period of time. I'm not sure that would have been helpful in some ways. In others, it would have been. The one thing that I'm scratching my head about right now, in the early spring when the walleye spawn, the timing between when they're done spawning and the fry hatch and are kind of swimming around in the shallow water, there's a period there where that warm weather was really helpful because it helps produce more zooplankton, and that's the food for these tiny walleye fry. The more and the faster they can get fed after they're born, the better the chances that they're going to grow through the summer. And after that, you want to get the largest possible walleye fingerling by the end of the summer. That increases their survival over the next winter and
sure.
So on and so forth. So right now, the cold snap is working against that.
Yeah,
we'll just have to see. You know, it's one of those things. I've been fishing Winnie the last couple of days. One of the effects of fishing on that lake, the water has really become super clear. It was yesterday 10 to 12, maybe even 14 feet of water. It was very easy to see the bottom. And so that makes life a little bit tricky for folks who are trying to catch a fish that the old staple way of fishing walleyes on that lake, and historically has been troll around until you see fish on your graph, and then stop and drift or troll something, you know, where you're fishing right below the boat. These days, you have to figure out a way to stay out and away from the boat a little bit. Don't let the fish see you coming.
Is it zebra mussels on Winnie?
Zebra mussels is the big thing, and then we've got the faucet snails, which are in there that do sort of the same thing, maybe not to the same extent, but yeah, you add it all up, the water has become quite clear because of that. In fact, if you follow Bowen Lodge, you can, I put links to it on my fishing report page, but Bowen Lodge had an early season outlook this year, and I was reading that the first time historically Winnie has had a above average growth rate compared to other lakes in the area for walleyes, and now for the first time the clearing water and the reduction in that zooplankton supply for small fish, the growth rate has declined now in the first time, and that's another thing that we'll just see if that's a cycle or a long-term trend, but the fish are, it's going to take them a little bit longer to grow than it used to. That leads you into another thing that may or may not be good, because the fast growth rate on Winnie has encouraged the fish to move into the protected slot size quicker than they do on other lakes. So we were just talking about this during our fishing trip yesterday. It seems like only a few days ago we were talking about this gigantic 2019 year class of walleyes that was growing and becoming desirable for folks who wanted to bring home fish to have a fish fry. And all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, a few years has passed by, and now all of those same fish, it's about a 50-50 chance even today that those fish are already in the protected slot. And we caught a number of fish over the last few days that are, when we measure them once, measure them twice, double check, triple check, they're 17 inches plus about 3/4 to 7/8. The protected slot starts at 18 inches and goes until your folks are allowed to have one fish over 23 inches in possession. So right now, we probably have a couple of weeks at that, even at a modest growth rate, a lot of those fish will enter the slot and become protected probably by mid-June or late June at the very latest. So it'll be an interesting summer out there. It should be a great summer for folks who love to catch fish and then take pictures of them and release them.
Throw them back.
Maybe not such a great year for people who want to harvest a ton of fish. We haven't, me, for example, on my fishing trips, I have not brought in a limit of walleyes out of Winnie yet. We've come close. I had three guys on Sunday, and on that particular day, we got 16 instead of 18. So we were close, but not quite. And then we probably released about a similar number of fish that were in the slot size. So that's kind of what to expect right now out there on that lake.
Hey, Jeff, I want to go back just for a second. Did you call little, like, young walleye fry or fingerlings?
Well, they're fry. Fry is until about, let's say, 2 to 3 inches someplace in that neighborhood. From the time that they're just born, they're fry, and then they reach a 2 to 3 someplace in that neck of the woods. The DNR uses another term called fryling, which is in between that fry stage and when they're fingerling stage. And then at the end of the summer, fingerlings typically, depending on the growth that they had during the summer, they could be on the smaller end, 5-6 inches, or occasionally on the larger end, maybe 8-10 even on a, if it was a really, then we're back to that warm weather. If you get a lot of warm weather, really good for those small fish, but it puts stress on some of the other fish that are in the lake. We're focused on walleyes, but one of the impacts of kind of this warming temperature trend over the long haul now, lakes that had a marginal set of circumstances to be able to keep tula bees alive. That tula bee is an important food source for large fish like big walleyes, northern pike, muskies that need a big, they need a big meal with a lot of fat, a lot of protein, and those tula bees are a perfect fish for that. So warm lakes, some of them, we'll just use Winnie as an example since we've been talking, but this could be any number of lakes in the north central Minnesota region where the water temperature has been cool enough to support tula bees, but then just a little extra warmth is enough to make that habitat undesirable for them. They need cool temperatures and they need good dissolved oxygen. So if you have a lake that starts to get too warm and you have a really high algae bloom, as that algae dies off in the summertime, it can create oxygen shortages in the deep water. The tula bees are forced out of that because they can't breathe, so they move up into the warmer water, and then finally the warm water gets them. So some lakes in our area are just fine because they're deep and they're clear and cold, and the tula bees will do okay there alongside of another lake, which is a little too warm and a little too shallow, and the tula bees struggle. So some of the larger predator fish that depend on that food source, one thing that can happen is that those fish just start to disappear because they can't grow. The other thing that can happen is they turn to other subjects, you know, and start eating crappies or walleyes or other game fish. They'll eat, fish are very adaptable and they'll eat whatever's available to them. Sometimes that creates conflict for anglers because if I love one kind of fish and you love a different kind of fish, we both want to protect our thing, and it can create a little tension between groups at times.
Yeah, so one, like most things, one way is not the the best way for all fish. The warm temperatures help the walleye, and yes, okay. Yeah. So, Jeff, you were telling me that the winds of this last week have, how does that affect you?
Well, it has been rough. I think ever since the opener, the wind was blowing. I can't remember a time when it was just a nice, calm day where you could go out and do what you want to do. There's more than one thing to consider when this is happening. Now, the obviously, you have to be able to find a safe place to fish. So that means either going to a smaller lake or fishing on the calm side of a larger lake, so on and so forth. This is something that most folks have become adaptable and they can figure out, you know, to find the right corner. But fish location, one of the things to think about, especially now with Memorial Weekend coming up, after all this period, we had a good long run of east wind, which is sort of unusual for us. But as that wind continues to blow, visualize the current that's formed in the anywhere down to about 12 or 14 feet of water. That wind is actually moving all the water from the surface right to the bottom. When we were kids, we used to get in some of these above ground pools, like a round pool, and five or six kids would run around in a circle. And then when you stop, you can feel that current would still blow you around in the pool. And that current, fish have a tendency when they're feeding to move forward into the current. You never, like if you're following fish that are going in a creek or a small river with clear water, you can see them nose into the current moving upstream. And walleyes in particular are a current, a river type fish. And so they'll move a little bit further. If you were fishing in one spot today and the wind is the same as it was today, tomorrow, then those fish typically would advance a little further into that windy shoreline. So if you're looking for fish, you were, let's say you were here last weekend or you were here for the opener, and fish were located in a certain place, calculate how many days we've had of this wind, and start moving further up that shoreline and look for fish that have gone into the wind. And on Winnie, for example, or Leech, any of the larger lakes, these movements can be, you know, measured in miles at times. A friend of mine told me one time about a really good angler and somebody who knows how to track where the fish are from one day to the next. On Leech Lake early in the season, they followed a school of fish that moved almost 8 miles over the course of a weekend. So got to keep that in mind as they move around. You need to adapt to it. There was an example of that going on Winnie yesterday where there was a little corner where the fish had been moving east, moving east, moving east. And then at a certain point, there's just a lot of fish in that east, southeast corner of the lake. And there, that, in fact, now there was some pressure. A lot of people were in there fishing for them, so it wasn't the easiest to get those fish to bite. But it was probably the best on my graph. It was the best sightings that I had for the whole day was moving into those southeast corners of the lake.
Well, I know we're going to talk about Memorial Day fishing in just a bit here, but it does look like the winds for the weekend should be down from what they've been this week. So hopefully that won't be such a major consideration for the fisher people out there.
I think it's going to play right into everybody's hand for Memorial Weekend. Going to be a nice, busy weekend out there. People should enjoy that. We'll, with my cracked fingers and numbness that hasn't gone away ever since I froze my hands over last weekend, we'll just look at everybody and tell them, I hope you're having fun now.
Okay, so you told me that the DNR announced a new muskie management plan yesterday and opened up for public comments. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, they've been working on this for quite a while. I posted a news story that came to me from Aaron Meyer, who is the co-chair of the Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance. And they're very, very proactive. They want to do what they can do. That's their sport. They love fishing for muskies. They love fishing for gigantic northern pike. And so they're trying to advance that cause a little bit. And there was a time when Minnesota DNR and some of the local chapters of Muskies Inc. and so on and so forth, they put a lot of effort into establishing muskie populations in a bunch of lakes. But then they kind of like took their hand off the steering wheel. Okay, we're good to go, and everybody forgot about it. And then now the muskie fishing has sort of declined in recent years, and people they're struggling to find good places to fish, and the DNR hasn't really kept up with the demand for stocking in some areas. So this new muskie plan has been a long time in the making, and it looks like what they're going to do is kind of prioritize some of the most popular lakes. Vermilion, for example, in our region is one of the highly popular lakes just south of our listing. There's probably a lot of people listing in the Mille Lacs area. Mille Lacs is another big one. Lake Minnetonka is another big one. And so they're going to kind of double down on working on bolstering those populations in the most popular lakes. This isn't probably going to reach into every little corner, you know, lakes that had a few muskies stocked in them and aren't doing real well, probably still won't change those much. But the high destination places, this will probably make a difference. And one of the things that I'm going to do is concentrate on stocking a larger size muskie. Instead of putting in a fingerling, which is a, you know, one season long fish, they're going to start using yearlings, which have been kept in captivity for a full year or over a winter, and then stock those larger fish just to improve the survivability. That's one of the key things. And then I guess once upon a time, the DNR had a specialist, a muskie specialist, who kind of oversees all of the muskie stocking operations, and that position has never been filled now for a while, and so they're working on trying to fill that position and get a little more attention into it that way. So one of the things to keep in mind, I know this is a thing, just like we talked about, one group of people like one kind of fish, another group of people like something else. Muskies get kind of a bad rap because people just assume that if you have a muskie in your lake, every time that muskie goes on a little swim, it eats the kind of fish that you want to catch. And that's not necessarily the case, especially lakes that have good tulipy populations, for example. That muskie is going to search for that fish and try to find it to eat. And other examples, suckers and sheephead and a lot of different species of fish in a lot of lakes are target for muskies rather than walleyes and crappies and so on. So, and one of the big things, almost everybody who fishes agrees that there's more than we need of small hammer handle northern pike. And the best way to get rid of those is to have large predators like big northerns, muskies. That helps you control the population of those small northern pike. So even though you may not be a muskie fisherman, it's not a bad idea to support this. And we're all kind of independent We are dependent, interdependent mm-hmm. on each other because anybody who fishes, just their presence in the bait shops and the gas stations and hotels and so on and so forth helps everybody else. So we all kind of need each other. The public comment period goes through mid-June on this, and I put a link to that in the report yesterday. So that's up and ready to go. You can read more about it. There's a link to the muskie page on the Minnesota DNR website, and then there's a link to the email where you can comment one way or the other, if you're a supporter or not. That's what these public comments are for, so the DNR can gauge what the interest is and know whether they want to make a little tweak to that plan or leave it the way they've got it written right now. And it's a good long piece of paper, so take 5-10 minutes to read it, but it'll be worth your time.
You can find that at jeffsundin.com. Jeff, we've run out of time this morning, but good luck. It sounds like a beautiful weekend for some fishing, or at least to be out on the water at the very least.
Yep, it will be with the better weather now and the warmer conditions. This will be a good weekend to poke around in the shallow water. Keep your eyes open for crappies and sunfish moving in. The lilacs are in bloom, so as soon as the crappies get a chance, they're going to try to push towards the shallow water. That'll probably be this weekend.
Thanks, Jeff. That is our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin. You can hear him every Thursday morning. Good luck, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Thank you.
This is the Thursday Morning Show on KAXE.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. A long-standing argument over funding for law enforcement on Northwest Montana's Flathead Reservation is over for now. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports Governor Greg Gianforte has signed off on funding to help county and tribal officials hash out a long-term plan.
For years, Lake County and Governor Gianforte have sparred over who's financially responsible for prosecuting tribal members for felonies on the Flathead Reservation. Lake County has historically done that work under an agreement known as Public Law 280, but the county says it can no longer afford that service. Both the county and the state had planned to leave the agreement. That would mean federal law enforcement would take over, but federal officials have said they don't have the resources. This session, county, state, and Confederated Salish and Kootenai officials hashed out a plan. The state is providing $6 million over the next 2 years to help transition more cases to tribal courts. CSKT spokesperson Rob McDonald says some of that work has already started.
We have, in the past 18 months or so, taken on more than 150 felonies and increased our efforts to reduce the workload on the county.
But Lake County is expected to continue handling more serious felonies that require prison time. The CSKT and Lake County are required under the new law to hash out an agreement laying out the balance of cases each will take on. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
This month has seen many awareness events across Indian country for missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and people. This included an event in Gresham, Oregon, organized by MMIW Search and Hope Alliance. Honor songs were sung with dancing. And people affected by the murders or disappearances of Native people shared their stories before an audience.
It was January 9th, 2024.
Kim Lenning is founder of MMIW, Search and Hope Alliance. She says there was power in what people shared about their missing or murdered relatives.
The power lies in experience. So many times people say they understand, but sometimes they don't. And they don't understand because they haven't seen it firsthand from experience. So when you bring in surviving family members that are still searching for their loved ones, it brings a different environment of emotion to the audience that's listening.
While many cases remain unsolved, one outcome brought relief. Luann Aiken, a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians of North Dakota, was found alive on May 10th in Portland, Oregon, after a two-year disappearance. Lenning says she verified it was Aiken, then contacted her relatives.
A lot of tears, a lot of relieved emotions, and some sadness because of the situation. She'd been missing for so long. We did offer them help if they needed help to come out and take Luann home if Luann chose to go home. We're just letting them as a family kind of figure that out. And if they so choose to take us up on that, then we have offered them to bring them out here so that they can travel as a family back home to North Dakota.
Lenning says her organization will hit its one-year anniversary in July. She says the celebration will focus on volunteers who keep things going. Lenning says while MMIW Search and Hope Alliance is largely a regional effort, they try to help with national cases. This includes the Oklahoma City case of Seneca Shimeme, whose family says he was killed in a deliberate hit and run last October. Missing and murdered Indigenous events will continue through May. Those who want to get involved can contact their tribes or look up community calendars. You're listening to National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
National Native News is produced by Quahonic Broadcast Corporation, funded by the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is the Thursday morning show on independent radio, KAXE. Thank you for being here. We wouldn't be here without our members. We are people-powered radio, and we can always use your membership at any time. Go to KAXE.org. I'm Kari Hedlund. Malachi Coons joins me. Good morning, Malachi.
Good morning. It was a lovely little trip in. I saw your note about coming in kind of as the seasons have changed.
Yeah.
And I had the same thing. It was so bright. I was weaving on my bike to avoid sprinklers that were spraying into the road. It was just a nice time. You're sitting in for Heidi.
Yep.
I'm sitting in for you on the other side of the desk.
That's
and
right.
And I have some fun. We got a lot of stuff coming up today.
We do. It's a good morning. We are starting a conversation with the National Weather Service. We'll be talking weekly with them, just checking in and finding out what our forecast in the next week is looking like. And we'll also do a news update with Larissa Donovan. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we have Itasca Life Options coming in. They have a theater production going on tomorrow at the Rife Center at noon, called Mayhem on Main Stage. We're going to be talking with a couple of the actors and Sonia Lingard, the assistant director at Itasca Life Options. So be sure to tune in for that conversation.
Yeah, that's all just in the next, let's see, a little over 2 hours here. However you're starting your morning, we will bring you a great conversation and some interesting stories on things that are going on in your community as a way to kind of get into the day. And then later tonight, it's time to party.
Heck yeah.
Is that right, Kari?
Yes. And if it stays like this, come on.
I know. I saw a high of 66.
This is a beautiful night. It's we've got Kick It with KAXE going on. We did this last year with our annual meeting. We put on some live music in conjunction with the annual meeting. And it's We'll do an annual meeting at 5:45 at Rapids Brewing on the patio. We'll do a quick recap of 2024, take some board nominations, and just a way for you to find out what KAXE has been up to and what our plans are for the next year. Then we'll start some music at 6:30 with Molly Mayer. We'll give out some volunteer awards in between. Then we've got Teague Alexi and Woodblind and Holy Smokes Malachi, this collective. There's like 9 or 10 of them.
Yes.
On the stage.
Yeah, I'm
it's going to be a hoot.
Very, very excited for that one. I was thinking about it. Teague travels a lot. The Woodblind duo themselves travels a lot. But this kind of larger collective where they all come together, I think for a long time they would only play in Duluth and only on Homegrown. But lately, Teague and Woodblind have collaborated and they've sort of been getting out a little bit more. And I think this will be kind of one of their first shows with this big group.
Well, and this
somewhere outside of Duluth. So it's kind of exciting that it's coming to Grand Rapids tonight.
For sure. When I reached out to ask them if they would be interested in coming as the full collective, because this album that they put out earlier, was it late 2024?
I think so.
It's a reggae ska album that they've done together, and it's so much fun, and all of our volunteers have been playing it a lot, and these are both very familiar names to our audience. And so when I reached out to ask if they could come for tonight, they were like, "What?" To your point, super excited to have an opportunity to bring it outside of Duluth. So I think it's going to be a great night.
Cool. We hope to see you there.
Free, open to everybody.
Kick it with KAXE tonight. We heard from Marion Castlake. It's just cool this morning, but hitting areas of patchy fog. Otherwise, a lovely day. We got to meet Mary. A lot of fun.
We did. She came in this week.
Stopped by the radio station earlier this week. So good morning, Mary. Thanks for tuning in. And we've been shouting out volunteers all year long, as that is another big part of the Kick It With KAXE event. We'll be handing out some awards this week.
All year and all week.
Yes, all the time. They make the station possible, go around, and are the heartbeat. As was very eloquently written. You can find that at KXC by Dan Gannon. He also shouted out Intrepid Dennis Elge, who trained him as a volunteer DJ over 12 years ago. Dennis has been on the airwaves for over 30 years. Amazing. Couldn't agree more, Dan.
For sure. And I'll give a shout out to Susan Lick, who trained me in when I was when I was just starting out on this pathway of KAXE. I had a small, small child. I had a baby, and she would take care of Anders. Anders would come in with me. Wow. Like, he was under a year, I think. And he would come in with me, and if he was making noises, Sue would take Anders out and leave me at the helm and just like, you got it, go. So she put me to the fire and got me going.
That's community radio, baby.
That is.
I know. What a cool story that both you and Dan, now working here, were trained in as volunteers.
As volunteers.
By folks who are still volunteering.
That's for sure. And if you have a shout out to a volunteer, someone that a DJ programmer that you love their music, that every time they're on, they surprise you, or they give you something consistently great, text 218-326-1234. We will share those with our volunteers and give them some good shout outs tonight at the Kick It With KAXE.
Absolutely. We received support from Cass Soil and Water Conservation District offering their Live in Lake Friendly event to provide info about how to protect the water quality of the lake that you love. This event is open to all on June 14th from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at Salem Lutheran Church in Longville. Registration now open at casswcd.org.
The Pine River Garden Club has a plant sale tomorrow from 2:30 to 5:30 at the opening day of Pine River Market Square. The market is every Friday through September near the Pine River Depot. It is time for the set list, checking in on live music going on this weekend.
This is the set list on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, May 22nd through the 24th, with music in Grand Rapids, Hibbing, Bemidji, and Crosby. First up, Kick It With KAXE is this Thursday, 5:30 at Rapids Brewing Co. in Grand Rapids, with music from Molly Mayer and Woodblind meets Teague Alexi. Mayer is a key figure and longtime member of the Minnesota music scene, making bluesy and authentic Americana music. Her band, The Disbelievers, features top-notch musicians from the Minnesota scene, like guitarist Eric Koskinen. Woodblind meets Teague Alexi is a recent collaboration between two Duluth groups, pairing the songwriting of Alexi with the authentic Jamaican sounds of Woodblind. That's this Thursday, 5:30 at Rapids Brewing for Kick It with KAXE. In Hibbing, Greg Taberzi and Paul Seba are hosting a Dylan tribute show Friday at 7 p.m. and Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Both shows are at Boomtown and are in honor of Bob Dylan's birthday this Saturday, May 24th. Another Friday night show is Wayward at Bridget's in Bemidji, this one at 8 p.m. Jonathan Edwards is an indie pop singer from Minneapolis with one album, Happiness, released so far. Friday, 8 p.m. at Bridget's. Then on Saturday, Aurora Bear is playing the Canna Wine Bar in Crosby at 5 p.m. A folk singer-songwriter with a background in punk and alt-rock, Bear's songs showcase her honest and gritty writing style. That's 5 o'clock Saturday in Crosby. Do you have information on live music you'd like us to know about? Email comments at kaxc.org. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxc.org.
That is the set list. You can hear it each week on KAXE, and you can find out more information about the set list at our website every week too, kaxe.org.
This is the Thursday morning show. Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, it's always fun to put together some selections of live music. I hope folks are taking advantage of it and checking things out around the area. Along with on those, the website we post on our article on Wednesdays, sometimes I'll include links to listen to their music, some photos of them. So you hear that on the air, but that's a great place to, if you have more questions about some of those things you hear, check that out at kaxe.org every Wednesday.
You can also find the write-up Malachi was talking about earlier about our volunteers by Dan Gannon on our website. It's about, do you want to be a DJ? We've got some volunteer classes coming up in June 3rd at KAXE in Grand Rapids, June 4th at KBXE in Bemidji. You can sign up today to become a DJ, dgannon@kaxe.org. Or you can text us and we'll get you the email there too.
Yeah, I like that he said volunteers are the glue holding us together and the kick drum heartbeat powering our 49-year-old radio station. Very poetic, isn't it?
I like that.
I like that a lot. And it's so true.
Yes, totally. I also had a text wondering what time the festivities start tonight. I don't think we totally nailed that down.
Whenever you first see us in the parking lot.
We are officially starting at 5:45 tonight. Music starts at 6:30. So that is for Kick It with KAXE. You can find out more at our website.
Support for KAXE comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses like Smart Biz, Managed Voice, and Wi-Fi services, security cameras, and more. Online at paulbunyan.net. Paul Bunyan Communications, it's right here.
So Malachi, on Thursday mornings, Heidi and I talk books sometimes, but I want to ask you, what music are you listening to at home? Not here. But like,
ooh, what music am I?
Are you into something right now or a genre? Or I know you do deep dives.
Yeah, let's see. So what have I been listening to at home? You know, I've kind of still been sort of making my way through the too many records I got from the record sale in Bemidji.
Oh, sure.
So this is not going to be new music, but I got a few records of Bert Jansch.
Yeah.
I've been kind of on this little, I guess, British folk music kick.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got another record the other day from an R&B singer called Laverne Baker, who I wasn't too familiar with, but it's very like 50s and 60s right, kind of blues, R&B, gets a little bit into soul. So her name's Laverne Baker. That is one that I just listened to yesterday. And then speaking of Bob Dylan's birthday, I also picked up Desire, which I didn't have, and that's my favorite Bob Dylan record. So
isn't that funny that I didn't even know, I hadn't looked at your playlist from Headwaters on Tuesday, and you played a track off Desire, and I also played a song off Desire yesterday.
Just random.
Very randomly, because Bob Dylan's birthday is on Saturday the 24th, turns 84 years old.
Yes.
So we've been kind of talking about that all week long.
Yes, I'll definitely. There'll be some Bob Dylan on Minnesota Mixtape tomorrow. And you heard on the set list in Hibbing Friday and Saturday, Greg Taberzi, folk musicians, doing a little tribute to Dylan. Over in Duluth, they've had the Dylan Week celebration kind of going on. They do all sorts of things over there, but it's nice that it gets a little bit more on the range. And Hibbing, And yeah, I go through different phases of different eras of him, but always have been partial to kind of the spooky tone that's on Desire. And some of like the folk violin melodies. It's just a little more haunting, I think, than other Dylan stuff, and that appeals to me.
If I recall you saying when you first started, you really enjoyed the 80s Dylan.
I love the 80s Dylan.
That's a hot take, a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I love the 80s Dylan. Like Joker Man. Joker Man might be my favorite Bob Dylan song ever.
Okay. All right.
Sly and Robbie. Yeah, you know, the presentation, I think it turned people off. Some glossy 80s production on some things.
Yes. We all should not expect anything from him also throughout his career at the same time. Mm-hmm.
I would agree. There's one specific compilation that we have here at the radio station that Chastity Brown is on, that a few different Minnesota folks are on. It's specifically called Bob Dylan in the 80s. Yep. And I think like Craig Finn